This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
You know, I gotta wonder what kind of working relationship he'd have with Satan.
It's Mike Shope.
I've often wondered that. Like, he, they, I don't know what his pronouns are, or their pronouns. Anyway, Satan.
And the Bulldog.
Maybe, what's the upside of doing well?
Well, maybe they're too busy making everyone else's life hell.
Oh, boy.
And wow. You might just be able to do your own thing if you're partnered with Satan.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
They're too busy, you know, making Scott Norwood miss field goals.
Oh, come on.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Poor Scott Norwood. The strays just keep coming. Here's Bulldog. Doesn't even really mean anything by that, I'm pretty sure. 35 years later, poor Scott Norwood. He made a few. Missed that one. That hurt. Hi, I'm Mike Shope. Thanks for being with me. Bulldog is off this week. I'll be sure to say a lot of things about him. Things that I won't say in front of him. But I'm going to make you wait a little bit for that. We will talk to Sal today and also Tyler Dunn. It is 1 month from the draft. I'll consider that, you know, an occasion. Don't need a reason, but I'll make it one to talk about the draft today. I know the show prior to mine, lots of people were calling in about the draft. Maybe, I always say this, but you get to a point, maybe it's now, maybe it was last week, maybe it was 2 months ago, maybe it'll be the day of, maybe it'll never happen, where you have an outcome in the draft that you want. I am having a tough time with that this year because while I think most people would say are saying the same things about the Bills and their needs, like there's pretty much a consensus on that. When it was wide receiver mania in here, this giant board beside me that the morning guys made and stuck, you know, the names up, trying to figure out our favorites, we were all about that last year. It ended up at Keon Coleman. But, you know, Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy, A.D. Mitchell, these other candidates for the Bills at receiver as post-Diggs trade and then Davis leaves, it kind of felt, okay, they're going to have to do this now. We wanted it for, a lot of us wanted it for a couple of years, didn't happen. They drafted Kincaid as kind of like a, I don't know, a compromise with the wide receiver train enthusiasts. And then last year, I mean, they kind of gutted it. So it was time for, you know, a blue chip prospect, which, you know, is in theory what they got in Coleman. He was the 33rd pick of the draft. He was the 8th receiver taken last year. So not exactly, you know, the most blue chip, if you will. But when we had these receiver debates, it was kind of it was lively because it was not unanimous that the Bills A should draft a receiver early or B would. You know, it's not, you never know what they're going to do, and the draft has to sort of get going before things become clearer. You know, boards can dry up, whatever. So you won't know before the draft, whatever. It was not unanimous that they should do it. And I say that thinking about how last year, this is a point we've talked about a lot, they really thrived when they shifted. This is 2023 now, from Ken Dorsey to Joe Brady, and became more built around the run. And it worked for them, so will they draft a receiver? Should they draft a receiver? All of that sort of in the framework where they didn't really get a lot from Diggs or Davis, hardly anything from Davis after that coordinator change, and Diggs, his production tailed off, but they still won every week until the playoff loss to Kansas City. So will they do it? This year, the consensus is really, you know, decided. Like, it's defense. And it makes perfect sense. They have been drafting offense up top the last couple of years. Their defense really fell off. Their pass defense really fell off, and it hurt them badly. That's what's maybe a little bit ironic about the Kansas City loss in the playoffs is, like, it's one thing, and they've lost to them four times now in the postseason the last 5 years. But it's one thing to sort of think about Mahomes and Kelce and Andy Reid and a loss to the Chiefs, an inability to stop the Chiefs can always make sense. But it was a year where Kansas City's offense just did not really perform. And yet against the Bills in the playoffs, they did. So defense is kind of obvious for the Bills. They don't have a starting corner, it seems, right now. Interior defensive line. And really any kind of playmaker position. Plus, it sounds like a draft where that's really for when the Bills pick 30 and then twice late in round two, that's really where the talent is, you know, there on defense. So it's both. It's these are your needs. This is what's available in the draft. And, you know, the last couple of years drafting pass catchers, all the more reason to think that's where we end up here. The challenge I'm having in talking about this every day is I don't think I care who or what it is. And, you know, that can be me just being lazy, but I'm being real too. Like, different traits, different sizes. Bulldog likes the bigger defensive tackle versus the smaller one. You know, corner can be, what is their arm length? All these kind of different physical traits or even intangibles that you can make it about. But I don't really have that much of a preference because I think, this is my excuse anyway, because I think it's kind of all the same for what it means to their chances. You need a couple of starters, at least one, and they'll end up with one somehow, either in the draft or, you know, another way. They'll get there. And then, you know, they'll roll the ball out in week one, and Josh Allen presumably will be the quarterback, and their offense will probably, because of that, be really good. And, you know, defensively, last year they were down. They won 13 games and another two playoff games. You know, it's like how much – we'll see what happens. But as you try to project it, how much of a difference does a first-round pick, pick 30 at defensive tackle make versus pick 30 at corner versus pick 30 at edge? I don't know. Like, to me, it's not enough to get super, like, locked in on a certain player or even a certain position when it comes to defense. So that's me. I mean, receiver is always, like, exciting to think about, but having drafted Coleman and even signing Joshua Palmer after having drafted Kincaid, I just doubt they would start this draft that way, plus it being a year where not that many people, relatively speaking, are that excited about the receiver options. I mentioned I have Tyler Dunn later. So golongtd.com is his site. And he's got from Bob McGinn, longtime NFL writer who covered the Packers, who's part of Tyler's team at Go Long TD. He's got a long breakdown and ranking of the top receivers. I've never been more spooked by the idea of, you know, a first round pick for one of these guys than today, having read that. Like, it's anonymous scouts, but the guy's got, I mean, McGinn has been around a long time, and, you know, by extension, Tyler, not questioning him at all. But if you've got anonymous scouts who are going to say, you know, things, obviously things that you wouldn't want to put your name on, like Luther Burden. So I do these PFF, I haven't done one in a few days actually, but I've done a few of these PFF mock drafts. And a couple times it came to be the Bills pick at pick 30, and you've got kind of the usual names on defense. But then there's Luther Burden, who is wide receiver. Should we count Travis Hunter? Let's count Travis Hunter. Like three or four. It's Hunter, who also plays corner, of course. And then it's Tet McMillan, almost always next. And after that, you have three or four different names, depending on your cup of tea. So Burden, a couple of times, came up for me in these mock drafts. You know, I want the A. I want a receiver, too. But I want the grade for posterity. I want to make a pick that PFF is going to like, which shouldn't be that hard, given that they're ranking the players and telling you their favorites. It really shouldn't be that hard. So Luther Burden, okay. I mean, he's up there. I know the name from these receivers and the combine and everything else. But then I read the thing at Tyler's website. The mom is a problem. It's written. The girlfriend is his manager. The mom is a problem. He's a good player, whatever that means. He's a good player on Saturday. He's very ordinary Monday through Friday. I mean, there are these kind of comments about a lot of these guys. Even McMillan, who is outside of Hunter, and I just say it that way because he also plays corner, but like everybody's wide receiver one, pretty much. Really immature, poster child for this NIL. Just like a, what is it? There was one line. The stuff on film this year, that's just gross. Like this is the best receiver in the draft. Different than recent years, eh? So I kind of like the idea because I always do, and I think the Bills could really benefit. But today I got a little scared because the class is just not as hot. Apparently, the mom is a problem. I just now you're telling me something here. So I mean that's just one article, but I think it's unlikely that the Bills do this anyway, and it leaves me just kind of like, I don't know, bored for what the draft can be. I mean, really, what could happen? I mean, teams make trades. The Bills have done plenty of that in the draft over the years. Little ones to move up for, you know, Kyrie Elam and Dalton Kincaid. Bigger ones to get to Allen and then Tremaine Edmonds. Like, just there's been lots of action from the Bills, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, I love that. I don't love trading up generally, but like, that my team's sort of in the game, right? But at 30, what, like even last year with, I think it would have been Brian Thomas, who ended up going to Jacksonville and being great for Jacksonville. I know the idea of the Bills trading up to get him came up a lot in here, and I definitely was against that. But that guy looks like a home run for the Jaguars at their pick. And I don't know, is there any reason, you tell me if you think so, because I would love to have it. Is there any reason to think about the Bills moving up here? Like, for who? To draft a different defensive lineman? To draft a different corner? I mean, maybe. When the Bills got, they're not all the same. I'm coming at this from a standpoint of, like, we don't know who's going to be good, right? Like, neither do the Bills. So that's part of, you could have, like, a serious conviction on one of the D linemen or one of the corners and not the other. But, I mean, I think that's kind of rich. I mean, because traits-wise, sure, but we're just not going to know how they're going to be as pros. So I tend to stay away from that. But if you did have that, you can get serious about, well, they should make this move to get to Kenneth Grant or Amos or whoever it is you want from the first round. And okay, I mean, again, like if you're listening to this and thinking like this is absolutely what should happen, talk to me. I mean, I'm not a trade up guy, but let's hear the argument. I just think so much depth, and I don't know what the other words might be for it, for me to think like that's probably not worth it. But I always think that when it comes to trading up. And then trading down, that was last year's thing. The Bills had traded up a couple of times, a few times, like I just mentioned, and they got to last year's draft, and all right, we didn't need this pick for Worthy, Kansas City, go ahead. Then we didn't need the pick that they traded to Carolina. Okay, ends up on Coleman. And as I've said about that many times, I think that's all fine. I think the best thing about how they set that up would be to trade down a third time with there being Coleman, McConkey, Polk, Mitchell, other guys at the top of the overall class. I mean, you had still a few receivers to pick from. And you have all day Friday. I don't know. I can't assume it was possible to do it, but you'd think so. All day Friday to make one more move and get something else out of your draft capital. And that's what the Bills didn't do, ultimately just making the pick for Coleman. So I don't know. It doesn't mean they won't trade down this year, but would they want to trade? It's kind of an interesting thing to think about, trading out of the first round like they did. I mean, there's a certain clout to the first round pick, and you know, you have the press conference and there's his jersey, we're all smiling, and here's your number one pick. You go down in history as that, and Coleman comes in instead as the first pick of round two. So the Bills do not have quite the same, just doesn't have quite the same energy or clout, again to use that word, as even the last pick of the first round would. So would the Bills, does it have to matter? No. But would they maybe want to get out of the first round for a second year in a row? Like, I don't know. I guess in a vacuum, I would tend to doubt it. 803-0550. Here's John with us. Hi, John.
How you guys doing today? Hope you're doing well. I'm actually of the opinion that we're going to go up the board and try to get the Bruce Smith of this draft. I think we have enough draft capital to just go get the one or two things we need to make a push for the Super Bowl. I think we've been so lacking on defensive pressure. I think we sold out for an aging Von Miller. We're selling out for an aging Joey Bosa. What does it take to get us to 2, to 3, to 4 to
not,
get
not Carter? Possible. Not possible.
Not possible?
No. To get to the top five?
Second, like what gets us there?
To the top five?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing gets us there.
No. Not, there's no way to do it with draft picks. I mean, if you wanted to trade a couple of starters or something and a bunch of draft picks, then maybe. But not realistic, in my view.
Not realistic? So if he falls to 5 or 6, there's no way we make a push to go get him?
It's not possible. You can make okay. you make the push, make all the push you want, but who do you mean? Carter?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know, John. I doubt he gets to 5, but maybe. But I don't know. Show me I'm wrong. Like, it doesn't have to work exactly like the simulators, but we did a couple in here where I offered, I'm the Bills. I offered two complete years of draft picks to have some fun imagining getting to Travis Hunter, and I was told no. So I don't think there's any way you can do that. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't trade up at all, right, to somewhere in the middle of the first round, I guess, to get you know what? This is really kind of the point. I haven't even opened one of those draft chart value things yet this year. It's still a month away, in my defense, I guess. But I haven't even opened the Jimmy Johnson chart. Let me just do that right now. Draft, NFL draft. This is when Bulldog would talk. NFL draft value charts. You know, there's different ones. I guess PFF would have its own. I'm on, first one that comes up for me is Draft Tech. All right, so let's make it we, right? We're in this together. why doesn't that come easily? We pick 30th, 620 points in value, according to drafttech.com. So the caller wants top five. I mean, that's at the minimum. To get to Abdul Carter, that would be Jacksonville at 1,700. So that's all of my picks, which is never going to happen, and then something else from next year would be like equivalent in this. So again, like that's not happening. But I don't know. I've not spent much time on the players who come in like 15 to 20. And I hope very much the Bills don't do this. But if you were to look at this same chart, something like pick 30 and pick 62, their own second. They still have Minnesota's second as well through Houston from the Diggs trade. It's funny that it's Minnesota because the Bills didn't. That's not from the Bills trade for Diggs with the Vikings, but the Texans got the Vikings pick last year moving around in the draft, and then they traded it to Buffalo. So let's go. Let's say I want to trade 30 and 62, and that gets me to like Seattle at 18. A first and a second to move up 12 spots. And look, I just have to say, I can't wait another second. Never do this. never trade your 30 and 62 for 18 and still draft defense. That would be really dumb. I would be very much against that. What you want in a world where you just, of course, don't know who's going to be good, you want more chances. You want more lottery balls. And that's the opposite of trading the two picks to move up a dozen spots or whatever that would be. People do make, and look, the Bills are a pretty good example. They do make exceptions for quarterbacks. And that's, you know, it's obvious why, because there's so much value there. There's so much riding on it. I've gone back and forth on whether I think that's even smart because, you know, sometimes we get the quarterback position wrong too. Thanks, John. I wish your idea were more realistic because, believe me, I would run with it. I probably still wouldn't want to do it, but at least that's my point kind of overall here about this draft so far for me is I don't really know what I want them to do that I really have any conviction about. You want to draft defense because your defense went the wrong way last year, and offensively, you've got most of what you want or what you need with the offensive line pretty stable. And even as Sal has pointed out before, their depth up front, of course, Allen, you know, receiver wise, I think there should be some room for a receiver maybe by round four or at least by round five. But they don't look like a team really primed for that, I want to say. And the class is just kind of mid. So I wouldn't get my hopes up there. So where does that leave you? If that's you, just pick a couple of these guys, defensive players, potential to be starters, Thursday night, Friday night, and go from there. And that is the Thursday night, the opening round, 1 month from today. 803-0550, glad to have John's call. We'll get into some more, I hope, through the day, talking about the draft and other stuff for the Bills. I want to talk to Sal. We've certainly done some of this, but among other things here coming up next. So James Cook, Christian Benford, still under contract both. Like these are not guys who are free agents like Douglas is. You know, these guys who are on your roster. But both sort of in position for new contracts. Cook, of course, has been more vocal about it. As far as I know, I haven't seen anything from Benford, but he's probably at that point where they're expecting something for him long-term, big dollars. And I just wonder, so today is March 24th. When does it start to become a concern? Is it already? Like, the Bills have been really good at getting these kinds of things done and getting them done early, like they did this year with Shakir and Rousseau and Bernard. Just kind of like, before you're even thinking about it, this happened with Allen. Not even, I don't mean this time, but like the first big contract, it was just kind of like, oh, okay, already. No drama, no back and forth in the media or anything like that. And it was just done. And I think I want to say from that as a compliment that that's how you'd like to do it. That's how the Bills have been able to do it in these other examples. So I've got Benford and Cook, and I don't have anything now. And I think that doesn't have to be any sort of bad omen, but I kind of wonder if it is, given how smoothly and quickly they've been able to get other deals done. So that and more with Sal coming up after a break. Tyler Dunn today as well. As we get later, Paul Hamilton reflecting on the Sabres weekend. The next game for them is tomorrow night at home against Ottawa. I'm Mike Shope. Glad to have you. Bulldog is off this week. This is WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
What does it take to change the course of lung disease? It takes groundbreaking research in pursuit of new therapies. It takes the world's leading experts in complex pulmonary conditions focused on restoring patients' quality of life. It takes visionaries to improve treatment options for even the most advanced disease. To lead lung care forward across our region and the world, it takes Temple Health.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Kickstart your new year with a rewarding career at the HK Group. HK is the leader in heavy construction and contractor site materials with over 80 locations across Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. HK offers a wide range of opportunities, including heavy equipment operators, CDL drivers, mechanics, site supervisors, engineers, and project managers. 100% paid benefits designed to promote healthy living, financial stability, and career growth. The HK Group does not discriminate. Apply today at hkgroup.com. It's your future opportunity.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
Hey, 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 hey.
Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back. Didn't start with the tournament today. I do have thoughts. One being I'm dead. I'm out. I'm out of everything. Just this was like the most predictable tournament ever so far. Just favorites. The favorites even covered like crazy. But I'm in these survivor pools like with Trista and Joe Ostrowski, and it's about the game theory, right? So, all right, if everybody's going to pick Duke, I got to pick, you know, Colorado State. It's still fresh in my mind, the end of that game. You know, but it's interesting to talk about, and Sal Capaccio joins me now on the West Her Hotline. No doubt Sal has thoughts on this. I mean, it's 1 year, Sal. So even though it's like, it seems like it's tempting to take what's happened this year, the favorites just dominating like they have, and make this into what we think is the new normal. But it is still only 1 year. I don't know. It's a little bit sad though, isn't it?
For sure. It's sad. I mean, for me, I've been reading a lot of stuff on it today. I've been tweeting about it a bit today. I mean, the stats are staggering. The numbers are staggering when it comes to the power programs and where they are compared to the rest this year compared to where it's been. Now, there's some nuance here. There's no doubt. There's been so much expansion and realignment that even a program like BYU, which I had to look up to make sure, is now in the Big 12. That's normally considered, you know, not a Power 4, Power 5 conference. But the overwhelming, you know, sentiment is the mid-majors are getting squeezed out because of the way everything is with the portal and NIL. And I think this is going to be the new normal. I am all for Blue Bloods playing in the Elite Eight and Sweet 16. It's great when you see games like that. You know, Duke against Kentucky is awesome. But it's just this year, we had virtually hardly any upsets of note for teams that really were more of the, you know, mid-majors, Cinderellas. And those are always fun. And it just seems like this is the direction we are going because of where college sports is. And that's what's sad to me.
Yeah, like the tournament is, it's great for two things. It's great for those classic matchups. It's not only great for upsets, but the potential for upsets has us, you know, edge of our seat. Can George Mason or Florida Atlantic, like we've had in recent years, make a run like that? But then, you know, maybe they win a couple and you get to this week and like, I'm really not that interested in George Mason. But, you know,
right.
So you want those classic matchups too. I don't know. Like it's tough. When I realized only last week before the tournament started that Florida Atlantic, which 2 years ago went to the Final Four, right? Florida Atlantic.
And yes, and last year did well too because their coach was Dusty May, who's now Michigan's coach.
Yes. Like their best four players all made the tournament for other teams, including one on Michigan mm-hmm. who went with the coach to Michigan. And a guy on like the second leading scorer or something on Florida. I'm like, wow. Well, I guess that's what we're talking about here. So little bit.
And Mike, I think this is just a larger discussion that sometime maybe we can have together. Maybe we could do it when we're together this week. I don't know. But it's something that's really interesting. And there's a lot of complicated layers to this. There's a lot of nuance to this because like today I see Justin Pippen, who is Scottie Pippen's son, is entering the transfer portal. He plays for Michigan. They are in the tournament still. They're playing in the Sweet 16. Like, it's just, it's wild. And, you know, I'm all for the players getting paid, and I do think they should be allowed to move, you know, in certain situations. But, like, what if we had NFL, every professional sport? Let's just take the NFL. And just imagine if the NFL had, think about this for a second, everybody. If the NFL had every single year free agency, no contracts, everybody's a free agent, and every team had no salary cap. That's exactly what college is right now.
Yeah, and it's not great for the fans, right? Like,
no.
The point of it all should be what's best for the fans, but it does get tricky because I think it's with good intentions that players have this kind of power and can make money when there's so much money being made by the schools. But, you know, sometimes in life, unintended consequences, you know, whether maybe that's cannabis, which, you know, not to get political, but, you know, should people have this right? Okay, yes. And then, like, so many times you're just driving and you smell the smoke, or you just go somewhere random and it just smells like smoke. Like, I really didn't want that, but I guess that's what I got because, you know, this change was made societally. Okay, well, if I didn't lose you, I brought it up already, Sal, with the Bills, thinking about James Cook, Christian Benford. Two players that seem, as we've talked about many times, positioned for like their next contract, if not even a big contract, more so in Benford's case. So today, March 24th, when would you start to get nervous, if at all, or if not already? I made the point before, like the Bills have been so quick and easy, it seems, with a lot of these deals, including a few this year already, that maybe somebody would think they're already in a little bit of a jackpot with these guys because there haven't been deals yet. Of course, you could also say that even like training camp is still a long ways off. How would you look at it?
Well, I would look at it two ways. There'd be only two instances. There's a timeline I'd be nervous and an instance I'd be nervous. If you don't see them show up for stuff, like the stuff that really counts, and then you can be fined for, now we're having an issue. And now that's when you start to get, okay, something's got to get resolved here. But it's just so rare now because of how much money these guys have to forfeit. Otherwise, Mike, if everything's status quo right now, as it stands, and they, you know, they go to training camp, I don't think it matters for 11 months, to be quite honest with you. They're under contract. They play, and then you still have another month after the season to try and work something out. How many times did we see guys this year sign with their teams before they actually hit the open market? That's what you could do, and I still think that there would be a legitimate chance for that to happen. They could also place transition tags and franchise tags, so I don't think there's any reason whatsoever to be nervous, as you put it. However, their actions could create you to cause you to be that.
So I don't know if this is still a guess, I would think, even for you on the inside, closer to the inside than I am, but you would think probably both guys show up even without a new deal? Like, that's their choice.
For training camp, yes. I think I'm very interested to see what happens during OTAs and minicamp. The voluntary stuff, I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see these guys. I'm not predicting they're not going to. I think that, you know, however they want to handle it, they want to handle it. And you know, if James Cook isn't there for the voluntary stuff, okay. Christian Benford isn't, fine. I mean, that's what happens sometimes. I mean, you know, guys sometimes don't show up for the voluntary stuff unrelated to their contract just because they're like, hey, I want more time with my family and I'm going to be doing football for the next whatever months. When it gets to training camp, as I sit here right now, yes, I would guess that if they're in the current state with 1 year left in their deal, I think they show up. because they would be fined massively every single day that they don't.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester hotline. How big is it going to get for Benford? Like, top what? Have you thought about that?
I have, and it's a really good question because I think you can really kind of turn yourself around a little bit thinking about that, which I mean by that is, does he have the like production of the interceptions? No, he's not some ball hawk that puts up these big numbers and you know, you're like, oh yeah, he's got to be paid amongst those guys. But he is very, very good at what he does for you. He has very good like analytics grades if you want to go down that road. Like, how do you want to approach this? And kind of reminds me of in the NHL or Major League Baseball when you have arbitration and you got to go into a room and the team kind of has to argue against you a little bit, yep. Right? Well, you're not as good as you think you are because of this. Like, there's always different ways that you have to figure out where he basically slots in. And if you look at the top paid corners in the league right now, I mean, Stingley just signed for $30 million a year. J.C. Horn, $25 million. And what's funny is when Horn signed for that, I tweeted, okay, now, you know, this is going to impact Benford. And several people said, well, he's not J.C. Horn. Well, I think you could argue he's J.C. Horn. I don't think J.C. Horn has been spectacular. I think Christian Benford is in that group. I don't think he's Patrick Surtain. Jair Alexander is getting paid over $21 million. He's fantastic, but he's been very injured lately. So he's probably in that next tier. That's, I mean, you're talking $20 million a year right there.
Do you think draft capital means anything in this equation? So the two players you mentioned that got the big contracts were both first-round picks, even like kind of early first-round picks. And here's Benford, a success story from the sixth round. Does that matter anymore?
I don't think it does because like from the Bills' standpoint, like if he's worthy, he's worthy. From your standpoint, I think, especially from the player's standpoint, the player doesn't care what round he was drafted in. If he's performed well for you, that's all that should matter to him, and I agree with that. So, no, I don't think so. But I do think from a look standpoint, it could matter for teams. From a PR standpoint, it could matter to teams. Like, you draft J.C. Horn, you draft Derek Stingley as first-round picks, you get to their third and fourth year, and they're really good. You know, you want to make sure you do everything you can to that first-round pick panned out for you. Whereas maybe you don't, I guess, do that where I could see that point. You don't have to have that urgency, I guess, if it's a sixth-round pick. But I think once you get 3 years in to 4 years in, it's about performance, and you pay what the you know performance matters to the player. Look at Brock Purdy, right, where he is right now. He was Mr. Irrelevant. It didn't matter where he was drafted, and we could debate all day long about you know how much he's worth, but I don't think it matters where he was drafted as it relates to his contract.
It may not, but it's still like right there. Top of mind all the time. Like, mm-hmm. Is he supposed to be good? You know, is Benford in right. his way supposed to be good? Maybe the people that are contacting you about how good J.C. Horn is, like crush Panthers film. Probably not. Probably the difference is they've heard of him. You know, like
right.
they've heard that's of him right. and they can see, you know, enough about how other people think he's good. It's like, that's the ball game. Maybe not.
Well, let me give a couple examples here if I'm looking. Let's go back to 2020. Matt Milano was a fifth-round pick. You know, and I know 2020, he took a lesser deal than what he probably would have made other years because of COVID, and it hurt the salary cap, but he was paid pretty handsomely. You know, Spencer Brown, third round, I guess you can't go down that road. But, you know, there's been guys that the Bills have paid and rewarded. Taron Johnson, fourth-round pick. You know, they gave him a nice deal. So I think he's on his third contract now, if I'm not mistaken. So is he top of the market? I guess he's near there for a nickel corner. It's not $30 million a year or $25 million a year, but I don't think the Bills play that kind of game. You know what I mean?
Yes. I saw your graphic last night, by the way, Bills picks by round since 2018. Yeah. It's odd that they only have 3 fourth-round picks in, what, 7 years?
It is weird. And, if you look back, and it's understandable why, what Brandon Bean has done is he has used fourth-round picks oftentimes to move up in other rounds, in the second round, in the first round, in the third round. They have 3 fourth-round picks in 7 drafts under Brandon Bean. That is wild to me. Taron Johnson, Gabe Davis, and Ray Davis, all good picks, by the way, I would say at this point. But, yeah, only 3 fourth-round picks in 7 years.
And those are often your comp picks, too, and the Bills haven't exactly cleaned up in comp picks, but you've got a little bit of that this year, at least.
Yep.
So when you, by the way, on that point, that graphic, when you analyze like the whole Brandon Bean era here for the draft. What if any are your takeaways? Because, like, you know, we of course get the calls and have these conversations, and kind of everybody sounds like they end up at, you know, good and bad. And wouldn't that just be anybody after this amount of time? You'd have hits and misses. But I don't know, like, is there more to say for you about the job he's done?
Yeah, there is. I think I'm fascinated by how many people have responded looking at this graphic saying, oh my God, there's so many misses. And then, you know, if they say which the misses are, and I have a complete different perspective on that. For example, somebody today, Jaquan Johnson was a miss. Like, Jaquan Johnson was a sixth round pick who played 4 years for you. That is not a miss. He's playing more than the average career in the NFL as a core special teams player. Ray McLeod, yeah, maybe at the time for the Bills didn't work out. He actually played quite a bit last year, and he's been in the league for now for quite a while. I don't consider that being a miss for a player. So I think that the perspective of hits and misses for a lot of people is very skewed. And I think, what are you expecting from a sixth-round pick? If you're expecting all pros, then everybody's a miss, right? If you're expecting Christian Benford's a sixth-round pick, he is a complete outlier and totally has outperformed his draft position. But when you look, DeMar Hamlin is not a miss as a sixth-round pick. DeMar Hamlin's been a good sixth-round pick. He started at safety pretty much every game for a team that went to the AFC Championship game. He's played 4 years in the NFL. Like, that's not a miss when you get to the sixth round. But if you want to talk about where he has missed, so that's the positive. I think what's been missing is, other than Josh Allen, the high-end talent. That's where the Bills have really kind of not hit. They don't have these superstars they've drafted, other than Josh Allen. Maybe James Cook is on his way to being that after the last year or so. But he has he's had kind of a higher floor, Brandon Bean, with a lot of the guys, but he hasn't quite hit the ceiling other than a guy like Josh Allen. There's guys in there who've been good, and Taron Johnson is one of the best at his position. There's no doubt. You know, is he, oh my God, he's an elite corner and, you know, wearing a gold jacket someday. That maybe that's too much to ask, but I do think after 7 years, the criticism could be, well, where's the higher end talent been other than the guys who've been just really good and you get value from in those rounds?
There's always so much to say, which at the same time is kind of maddening, because most analysis ends up just being relatively superficial. But also, like, it's part of the fun of it is how many different angles there are. One being, some of these guys, maybe any team, if the team is really good and you've got veterans all over the field who are stars like the Bills have had for most of this time, I mean, that makes it that much harder for anybody that you're drafting to become relevant. Like, they don't have the same opportunity as they would on a bad team. Also, these, of course, are usually end of the first round, end of every round picks. So your chances of hitting are going to be at least a little bit harder than if you were picking earlier. So that and more.
I like that point a lot, Mike. I make it all the time. It's part of the reason why, you know, sometimes I say, yeah, I can't see them using 10 picks because 10 guys aren't making this team. However, they did use 10 picks last year. They picked 10 guys last year. So maybe they do it again this year because they're still trying to supplement the roster with some cheaper talent given some of the high-end contracts they paid out, and they have to think about that going forward. Another takeaway, by the way, I'll say, he's done really well in the third round, especially with the floor, like I said. Spencer Brown, Terrell Bernard, Harrison Phillips, Dawson Knox, Devin Singletary, Dorian Williams, Zach Moss, and Dwayne Carter, who the book's still out on. But I think that's a solid third-round group over 7 years.
Is there a common thread? I'm thinking of, like, the school size, not really. I wonder if there's a common thread.
In fact, Mike, one of the anecdotes that I looked at with the draft, and this is not a criticism from me, I think it's just a fun fact because it's not just Brandon Bean. Brandon Bean in 7 years has never drafted a player from Alabama, a player from Michigan, or a player from Ohio State. I'm sure there's others, but those jumped out to me. I went back and looked, though. I said, okay, well, that's kind of odd. Is it really, though? Brett Veach has 7 years with the Chiefs. Never drafted a player from Alabama, never drafted a player from Ohio State, one fifth rounder from Michigan.
Wonder why? Just a fluke?
I don't.
Coincidence?
I guess it just shows that you don't really care where the guy went to school, really. Mm-hmm. You evaluate the guy, not the school. Those schools haven't, I mean, Alabama has, but Ohio State and Michigan have had a couple down years there. So, you know, and it's not like they avoid them. Levi Wallace went to Alabama. They signed him, you know, so you do get guys that come in. But I just think it's kind of interesting. It does tell me, too, that like where your draft picks went to school has really no correlation of how good your roster is or how good your organization is.
Clearly, it's time for the Bills to start drafting more guys from Wyoming. Don't you think, Sal?
I guess so, yeah.
That's worked out pretty well so far. Are you at a point 1 month away today from the first round of the draft where you have a player even, or just sort of an expectation maybe, but like a best-case scenario?
I just think the best-case scenario is the best defensive tackle that they like to fall to them. You know, whatever player that is, you know, I don't know if I have necessarily a favorite right now as I look at it. There's a few guys. I had Eric Turner on today from Cover One who has a few names that he liked that fit the Bills for their scheme. But to me, I just think this is a good year where their need meets value, meaning this is a deep defensive tackle draft. The Bills need still defensive tackles. And I like that idea still. But the more we go on here between now and next month, I'm very much open to they might have to take a corner with their first pick. I still want to see how this shakes out between now and then. If this roster has not changed, Mike, between now and a month from now, I may be much more in on I think they need to grab a corner earlier than they do defensive tackle.
Which is tough. I mean, you don't want to have to draft for need, right? Like, that's what Elam was. Would you not say that? I mean, that's what
I would.
He was, and doesn't mean it can't work out, but you really don't want to have to draft for need. You want to just draft for the positional value and, all right, well, I've got somebody in the spot right now, but that won't last forever. You know, it's just not that cut and dried. But, that would be a better place to be. All right, we've got the tournament. We talked about that. Draft in a month. Opening day, the real opening day this week. You know the Yankees' first three series are against National League teams?
I did not realize that.
Milwaukee, Arizona, and then they're in Pittsburgh next weekend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's early. I remember the COVID year, they were in Cleveland the week before the NFL draft, so it would be right around that time or so, and we went to Cleveland. And it was cold going to those opening games that week. It was also because it was 25% capacity at every stadium. It was, you know, hardly anybody there. But, man, I don't love the baseball season starting this early. I don't love it ending as late as it does. And I've often had an idea where I know they won't do it because of money. Like, they should go back to more doubleheaders because you could literally shave off, like, probably 3 weeks of the season if you play enough doubleheaders.
And again, I want to say, by next weekend, I don't mean this weekend. This weekend is the first real weekend of the baseball season. Yanks are home to Milwaukee. Then it's Arizona. And April 4th, 5th, and 6th, they're in Pittsburgh, all day games. That's the home opener for the Pirates on Friday, April 4th. So I'm sure some of you will be heading down for that. And you've been there, I assume.
Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Yes. We went to one game there a while. In fact, it was even before Max was born. We saw the Marlins play. Now, I've been outside that stadium many times. I've been to Pittsburgh many times. Actually, no, I'm sorry. Actually went again last year. When the Bills were there, I went. I saw Paul Skeens pitch last year.
Okay.
I forgot about that. How could I forget about that, Mike? But I went there. And I got to tell you, this is a great story real quick. We go to this game, me and a bunch of the guys, the Bills radio crew, and our buddy Bill Whipper, you know, I was sitting with Bill, and I happen to be sitting next to a woman, and she's rooting for Mariners they were playing. And I said, oh, are you from Seattle? She says, yeah, out that way. I said, what are you doing here? She said, I'm with a group. We actually help run the Roberto Clemente Museum. I said, oh, really? So then I started talking to the people, and the guy next to me is like, Sal, like, if you want to go, he said, I'll literally come to your hotel and pick you up tomorrow. You need to see this thing. So me and Bill Whipper went to the Roberto Clemente Museum, got like a private tour. Mike, it was fascinating and phenomenal.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance in Pittsburgh to go to the Roberto Clemente Museum, I know, Mike, would absolutely love it.
Is it near the stadium?
Probably a 10-minute drive, okay. Maybe 15.
Not super close then. All right. Thanks for the tip. And thanks for your time, as always, Sal.
You got it. Thanks.
Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. He and I will be co-hosting on Wednesday this week as we're live from Roswell Park for the kickoff of the Ride for Roswell fundraiser, the festivities there. He'll be co-hosting with me this Wednesday. Not next Wednesday, this Wednesday. Next weekend is, this is one of my dad's things. There's this weekend, which is, you know, Saturday and Sunday ahead, and then, okay. That's annoying enough. We will talk to, I will talk to Tyler Dunn after the update. This is Mike Shope. Bulldog is off this week. Thanks for listening to WGR.